Well, welcome to the Church and Family Life podcast. Today you're going to hear the life story of Michael Clary. He's a pastor of Christ the King Church in the Cincinnati area, author of God's Good Design. He's going to be preaching at our national conference in May. I hope you can come and hear him. But first of all, get an idea of who this man is and where he came from. Hope you enjoy the discussion. So, Jason, we've got Michael Clary here to tell his life story, and I'm really delighted he's going to come and preach at our national conference on manhood and womanhood. He wrote a great book called God's Good Design that everybody should read, and we'll talk about that later. We're going to do a whole podcast with him on this book, God's Good Design, so I can't wait to do that. But, you know, we want to hear a man's story, how God worked in his life. We want the people who hear him preach at our conference to know a little bit more about him, other than that he is Joe Blow from church whatever, you know. But he actually has a life. So,
well, let's get to know him.
Get to know him.
Michael, the floor is yours.
Yeah. Hey, so start the beginning. We're assuming that you were born somewhere.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in West Virginia, so rural country area. Uh-huh. Huntington is the town, the closest city. Marshall University is there. Some people know the movie We Are Marshall. And actually, the movie was based on, it's about the plane crash of the football team back in mm-hmm. the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And that happened right before I was born, but I was raised right beside that airport, you know, just couple minutes from that airport. And so it's part of the lore of the town where I grew up. Certainly has had an impact on that town. But grew up in a rural area. And my great-grandfather was a independent Baptist preacher, and my grandfather was an independent Baptist preacher. So it goes back, just ministry goes back in my family, few generations. But I would say, you know, probably the most relevant place to, you know, kind of a waypoint on my story is, I would say that the event of my childhood that had the greatest impact on my life, from a formative standpoint, would be when my parents got a divorce. And I became a Christian at an early age, so I'm talking about things other than my faith in Christ. But my parents got a divorce when I was about 7, and that really affected me, because at the time I didn't know anybody else in school. I didn't have any of my friends that had divorced families, and so I really felt very much like just an oddball. And so then that set up a pretty unusual circumstance to where...
Now did you have siblings at that time, or were you the only child?
I have 3 sisters. Some of them came later, but I had an older sister that, you know, that was our family unit. So she and I went through this divorce together.
Okay, yeah.
So what that set up then was kind of growing up in 2 households, because I would go back and forth, as a lot of kids do. The first few years, it was 50-50 split time. I'd be 2 weeks at my dad's house, 2 weeks at my mom's house, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks. And that went on for a couple of years. And eventually, I remember a moment getting in an argument with my dad, and just like, okay, I'm just going to go live with my mom. And that was, you know, that kind of, that's a big thing for a child to decide. I was maybe 10 or 9 or 10 or something at that point. But the contrast between the two households was pretty vivid. So my mom remarried a man that was a tyrant. Pretty much everything that you would want a man not to be. The exact opposite of a good role model was this man. And then my dad, have extraordinary respect for my dad, and he is a good Christian man, faithful churchgoer, godly husband and father, and he is he's everything you'd want a father to be, a good man. But I lived with my mom and stepdad, and that was, so I grew up kind of having over here with my dad a good picture of godly masculinity, you know, just a good father. But I was raised most directly by my stepfather, and just this awful guy that, and I despised him. You know, whether or not that was righteous anger or whatever the feelings I had about him, is probably more complicated than I'm able to really discern. But I certainly did not care for this man. And so I grew up just feeling this anger towards the family that I felt like was taken from me. And such a formative experience that it's kind of lingered on, and God has used it into my adult years to put me on a path of advocating for good biblical Christ honoring households, manhood, womanhood, children, legacy, generations, and so I'm thankful for how God used that in my life. Although at the time, you know, I didn't like it, didn't want it to happen, but I'm thankful for the way God did use it in my life. So that's a big waypoint of my childhood.
What happened after that? So you were bouncing back and forth, and then, you know, you come into you just did that into your teen years, right? And then what happened, you know, when you matured?
So as long as I can remember, I considered myself a Christian and wanted to walk with Christ. I remember going to church with my dad. So the deal was, my dad would let my sister borrow his pickup truck on the weekends, and the deal was that she would have to bring me and both of us come to church on Sunday to return it to him. And so we would go to this church. And, you know, as long as I can remember, I wanted to walk with Jesus, but the church was a small church plant kind of a church, and there were no other kids our age. And so we would do a Sunday school class, and the Sunday school class was my sister and I would meet with the Sunday school teacher, and it was kind of therapy, because the teacher, there was a couple different people that did it. The one woman in particular stands out. And we would just tell her, this is what's going on. And we would tell her stories, horror stories about what it was like in our house. And she would be like, oh, I can't believe what you're having to go through. And she would very, very caring and warm. And that was healing for us, because there was a godly Christian woman that loved us enough to listen to us and let us share our story. And so that was very great. But since I didn't have peers, there wasn't a whole lot of real community as a Christian. But as I got towards the end of high school, there's a Campus Crusade for Christ. They call them CRU now. Campus Crusade group that met at Marshall University, which is, you know, in my hometown. And so some of those kids were going to this church. So they're a little bit older than me, but they took me under their wing and invited me to go to their weekly Campus Crusade meetings, which I did. And so by the time I was a senior in high school, I was very involved. I had a huge group of friends with this Campus Crusade group. I was leading worship at the weekly meetings. And, you know, so by the time I went to college, I'm like, I want to go to this college just because I knew so many people there and had friends there. And then in college, that was where my faith became my own in a very powerful way for the first time. I mean, I was saved before that, but that's when I really came into my own spiritually. But there was always this desire to do ministry. I would lead Bible studies. I would lead worship. I would go on their, you know, summer trips or spring break trips, and just totally immersed myself in the Campus Crusade world. In 1997, on a summer project to North Myrtle Beach, that's where I met my wife. And so she and I got married in 1999. But because Campus Crusade was so formative for me, and because my church experience was, it was a good church, good people, but it was not really other than the kind of therapeutic Sunday school class, it was not really where I grew a whole lot as a Christian. So Campus Crusade became my church.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good thing. But I ended up going on staff with Crew, and we were assigned to the University of Louisville, my wife and I were. And so we reported there in about, we joined staff in 2001 and reported in 2003 after we raised support. And so during the time that we were in Louisville, a couple things happened that put us on the trajectory to where we are today. And one of those things is I became increasingly disillusioned with the parachurch world and how it had become a substitute, a replacement church.
Right.
And it was very narrowly limited to college kids. And I saw, you know, as I'm cycling through college kids every year, all the people that I'm in community with are 18 to 22, but I'm getting a year older every year. I'm like, this isn't sustainable or healthy or good. Simultaneously, I started taking classes at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary there in Louisville, and my affection for the church really started to balloon. And I started to realize that I had not really had a good doctrine of the church. And I came to the conviction that, you know, the church is God's plan A for the world. And the parachurch has a very narrow mission, and, you know, God uses it. But the church is really that is where God's purposes are fulfilled in the life of Christians. So I joined the core group of a church plant in Louisville. And that was when a lot of different things converged to where I said, okay, I love ministry. I love what I was doing with Crew, the actual ministry itself. But I was in an organization that I did not feel was really, it was not the best fit for me. I did not feel like this was where I belonged. I belonged in the church world. And then being a part of a church plant, I was able to see all the things I love about Crew ministry and all the things I love about church ministry converged in this idea of church planting. And I had never heard of that before. I was like, I didn't know where churches came from. I was just kind of oblivious.
And they're born.
Yeah, that's right. We have a mommy church and a daddy church, and they fall in love, you know. So that I really caught a passion for church planting, and the elders of that church, you know, affirmed gifting and calling. And so as I went all in with seminary, finished a degree, and was sent out in 2010. So I was on staff with Crew about 6-7 years in Louisville. But they sent out in 2010, and people always ask me, why did you end up in Cincinnati? Because I didn't have any prior connection here. And basically, it was we lived in Louisville, and the seminary is there. So a lot of people are planting churches around Louisville right out of seminary. And I thought, well, what makes sense is, you know, I've always lived on the Ohio River, grew up in Huntington, and then lived in Louisville. And so a Midwest Rust Belt city. And so I was thinking, okay, well, there's Indianapolis, there's Louisville, there's Cincinnati, there's Columbus, there's Cleveland, about 5 cities or so. But Cincinnati was very close, so we could take a day trip up from Louisville to kind of see and get a feel for the town. And as we took some day trips to Cincinnati, it just really grabbed our hearts. There's this, if you've never been to Cincinnati, there's a really cool place where if you like go to the airport, you land in Kentucky. And then if you drive there into the city, the highway that you take in, it's kind of, you're just driving along and it's just kind of suburbia. And then all of a sudden you go around a hill, and then out of nowhere, you just see this huge skyline that just sort of pops right over the hill very suddenly. And I came at nighttime, and just the lights, the way it was lit up, and it was beautiful. And I'm like, man, I love this town. And so through a number of other things, I could tell you more if you'd want to ask about it, but through a number of circumstances, God confirmed that that was the place to be. So,
and what year was that?
This was 2008 is when we moved to Cincinnati.
Got it.
So we
did a giant conference in Cincinnati in 2009 called the Sufficiency of Scripture.
Oh, really?
We did, right downtown. Yeah.
Did you do it at the Duke Energy Center?
We did it at the convention center. Yeah.
Oh, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. It was so neat. The place was packed. It was just, it was such a joy. Anyway, go ahead. Cincinnati. I know the lights you're talking about and the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Very beautiful town.
Yeah.
So, right around 2008 is, it's like we decided, okay, this is where God is leading us to be. And so we, me and Laura, and we had two children at the time. We had a third on the way. We were like, okay, move to Cincinnati and burn the ships. So we bought a house in the inner city. We're like, okay, we're going to go all in and just stake our claim in this and trust God that even though we don't know anybody here, somehow the Lord is going to work to produce a church through us somehow.
All by yourself, just you and your wife, huh?
Yeah, me and my wife and our two kids. It was, if anybody told me, hey, I'm thinking about doing that, I would say, do not do that. It was the dumbest thing.
It's a great thing about being young. You can do dumb things and there's recovery, right. You know?
Yeah, it was pretty dumb. But the Lord did orchestrate things. So I knew a lot of people from the crew world. I knew a lot of people from the seminary world. I knew a lot of people from the Southern Baptist world, which is who we planted through. And so I was able to network enough to where people would say, hey, I have a friend that lives in Cincinnati. Maybe they would join. And so what we did that between 2008 and 2010 was we just had a Bible study in my basement. It's on Wednesday night. And I would, every week, people would come, and I'm like, we're here, we're going to study the book of Galatians together. And if I'm here to plant a church, if that's something that would be interesting to you, I'd love to talk to you about it. And but for now, we're just going to study God's word, and I would really make sure that those meaningful content, helpful Bible teaching that was edifying for people, that was the focus. And people just, they liked it, and they kept coming. And so about a year and a half later, we had enough people had kind of signed on that we said, okay, we have enough here to form a little core team. And so we put together we rented a place in close to the University of Cincinnati, a little rec center there. They let us use it was a karate dojo. we could meet in there. So we launched January 10th of 2010, and that's been 15 years ago. We had a building given to us a couple years later, and then we planted a church in another part of town, and they had a building given to them, and that was about 2014. And then now 10 years later, we've moved to our new location where we are now in Fort Thomas, Kentucky, which is about 10 minutes from our inner city Cincinnati location. Now we're in Kentucky. So that's a thumbnail sketch of some of the big...
I know that your church embraces the Baptist Confession of 1689 now. Mm-hmm. Was that along with the church plant, or did that come later?
I would have said I'm Baptist and Reformed.
Uh-huh.
But I did not know enough about the 1689. It was not really on my radar.
Uh-huh.
So once I discovered it and learned about it, I was like, this is great. And you know, we have not officially adopted it as a church, but all of our elders hold mm-hmm. to it, and that's the perspective from which we teach. But it's you know, with the church plant, you've got, usually it's a young guy. It is a young man's game for the most part. And so you have this guy who's kind of untested. And he's been trained. A lot of them been to seminaries, but there's a lot of his own doctrinal stuff that's being worked out. Mm-hmm. And if you take a job as a senior pastor in a church, then you're inheriting the traditions from that church.
Right.
But if you're a church planter, it's like you, as the church is growing along with you.
Yeah.
And as you understand doctrine better, as you study better, as you preach through the Bible, you're like, oh, you know, I'm learning this thing over here. I want to help incorporate that into the life of our church.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that happens in every church plant. Probably 7 out of 10 times, there's a lot of bad that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have guys that they discover bad doctrine and they lead their church in a bad way, but the mm-hmm. church is growing with them. But occasionally, you have guys that are, you know, just in God's grace, they learn good doctrine, and are able to grow in maturity, and you all grow together. And so I think that's been my own growth as a Christian is reflected in the growth of our church too. And so that's been a real blessing, but it does go bad a lot of times.
Yeah. So Michael, I'm blowing up the timeline here a little bit and taking you back, but you mentioned that you married a woman named Laura. What was it that made you have to marry Laura?
I'm the kind of guy that notices the girl who does not want to be noticed. and so we're on this summer project, and it's funny because, that's a funny story. So she had heard about these Campus Crusade summer projects from a friend of hers, but they didn't have a Campus Crusade group at her college. She was raised Lutheran, and she became Christian just through a evangelical Bible study in high school. So she was not saved in church, and knowing her church, that there's a reason for that. They don't really teach the gospel. But she got saved in this Bible study. But in her naivete, she's like, well, I'm a Christian now, so I guess I'll go to a Christian college. And so she just picked one, Calvin College. Didn't know really anything about it spiritually, but she went to this college, and a friend at college told her, hey, you should go to this Campus Crusade summer project. And she at the time was like, well, I don't want to go just to meet a boy. I don't want to go with bad motives, but a boy came into her life that spring, and she thought, well, I've got this guy in my life now, so now I could go with a good motive to this project. But he never actually asked her to make a commitment. And he's like, well, you know, we like each other. We'll pick things up in the fall when we get back from our summer break. Well, that's the summer that I met her. So I go on the project, and I'm the opposite. I'm like, okay, I've got a plan. This project has 50 or 60 kids. So probably going to be about half of them will be girls. And this is a great place to meet a wife. And so, you know, within the first couple of weeks, I'd narrowed down to a list. I'm like, I like her. And, you know, this girl's cute. But what I noticed about Laura was she was super shy. Whenever I try to talk to her, she would just kind of, you know, turtle up. It's like, why are you talking to me? She just got really shy. But then one day we were doing a beach outreach, and this girl that would hardly talk to anybody, that was just trying to avoid getting noticed, I saw her taking her little Four Spiritual Laws booklet and approach total strangers on the beach and stand there and share the gospel with them. And I was like, that is a special girl who is taking steps of faith. And so she won my heart. I get emotional thinking about it. She won my heart right there. And so as we got to know each other, I played guitar. I was leading the music. And the guy that she was hanging out with at school is the kind of guy that was similar to her. He didn't talk about deep things a lot. And whenever I'd talk to her, I'd ask her, you know, deep questions, you know, what's your walk with God like? And, you know, how did you learn this? And she just saw there was something, she liked the guy that played guitar, but also the guy that asked her questions. And she's like, you know, she was drawn to me because of, and she would say this, just, she thought, this is somebody who kind of compliments me. So we complimented each other. And so there were several couples that kind of paired off that summer, but we're the only one that actually ended up getting married. So we dated long distance for 2 years. She lived in, her school is Grand Rapids, Michigan. Her hometown is Cleveland. So it's from my hometown, it was 5 hours to her hometown and 8 hours to Grand Rapids where she went to school. And there's no texting. And a phone call was long distance, so we would have to buy long distance cards. We'd write each other paper letters. My favorite part of the day is when I got home in the evening and I could like log into AOL and listen to the, you know, like the little modem noises.
We know.
And download whatever email she sent me that day and just kind of hang on every word and read it over and over and over again, print them out, you know, put it in my books and stuff.
You did have it bad. Wow.
You've got mail.
That's it. You've got mail. It was a very, very, very sweet time. And so she, wonderful. She did not want to go on staff with crew. But you know, that took a bit of coaxing. But I think looking back, we'll both say, man, we've got the best life. We're so blessed, so thankful for just all the ways that God has blessed us. We have four children. They're 20, 19, 17, and 14.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's great. That is so great.
Your favorite dead author and your favorite living author?
Oh, goodness. Favorite dead author, I'd say for my sermon prep and commentaries, Calvin is my favorite resource. I like Matthew Henry too, but Calvin is very rich. Other than Bible commentaries, Jonathan Edwards is one author that I've read multiple. So the Religious Affections, I've read that three times.
Oh, wow. Probably
the single most, the book that has had the single most biggest impact on my life would be The Religious Affections. Mm-hmm. Favorite living author, lots to choose from. I really like John Frame.
Interesting.
He's a Presbyterian, but the way he thinks, I really appreciate just the way he thinks. Mm-hmm. So I've told people before, if I had to trade brains with anyone, I would trade brains with him.
Wouldn't he be surprised?
Yeah. It would not be good for him.
Michael, thank you so much for telling us your story. And I can't wait to be with you at our national conference in May. And for the rest of you, hope to see you there as well at our national conference, Manhood and Womanhood, in Ridgecrest, North Carolina. See you there.
Church and Family Life is proclaiming the sufficiency of Scripture by helping build strong families and strong churches. If you found this resource helpful, we encourage you to check out churchandfamilylife.com.